Hello and thank you for joining us for episode 20 of The Backside of Water, a podcast devoted to the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Harrison Ownby.
And I'm Alex Stewart. Harry, 20 episodes. Finally!
I know, most shows hit that milestone in about 4 months, but not The Backside of Water. We are special. We believe anything worth doing is worth doing at a barnacle's pace.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations anyway, bud. It's been a great 20 episodes, and I look forward to the next 20. If we follow the same release schedule, by the time we get to episode 40, we will most likely be replaced by Android versions of ourselves, so that'll be pretty cool.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I just dreamed of electric sheep last night.
Bro, well done on that deep cut Blade Runner reference.
Thanks. Now, on to the subject of our episode, the life and times of Philip K. Dick.
Ooh, exactly, folks. Get comfortable because we're proud to present our first 3-hour episode. It was a dark and stormy night. Suddenly, Philip K. Dick was born.
We got them so good, Alex. They were like what?
I think that actually we lost about 700 listeners in one fell swoop of that horrible, horrible comedic sword.
That wasn't comedic. I've done tons and tons of research on Philip K. Dick.
Oh, dude.
I'm going to be very upset to learn that was all for nothing.
Oh, man. Well, we should probably break it to everybody that this episode is actually about an amazing piece of Disney history, the sailing ship Columbia.
That's right. This majestic vessel has graced the waters of the rivers of America for almost as long as the park has been open. Yet many folks have never stepped foot on her worn, swabby decks.
So, without any further ado, let's get our proper heading and set sail for the story of the sailing ship Columbia.
So it was the late 1950s, and Walt Disney couldn't be more pleased with the success of his new park in Anaheim, California. Sure, it got off to a rocky start with wet cement issues, unfinished areas of the park, broken water fountains, and other minor details. But within the first year, Disneyland had made the dreams of 3.6 million guests come true.
It was hugely popular, but Walt Disney never wanted to leave things the way they were. He was in the business of improving, or plussing as they called it, everything he ever created. And Disneyland was no exception to this rule. That's why one day in the mid-1950s, Walt decided it was time for another vessel to join the Mark Twain on the rivers of America. Since guests had ridden the Mark Twain countless times, Walt believed it was time to give them something new to experience.
Well, and I'm going to stop you real quick here and say that there's a story that I heard that I think Walt was with Dick Irvine, which was, he was a Disneyland who's who person, and he was watching the river, and there's a time when he saw the Mark Twain riverboat and the canoes, and he said, he suddenly told Dick, or it was either Dick Irvine or Dick Nunes. But he said...
Nunes sounds probably more likely.
Yeah, I think there's a... There's some...
Don't say it.
I know, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this. But there were multiple people named Richard that worked in Disneyland at the time that were players. So, tiptoe around that. But he said to Dick Nunes or Irvine, "That's a busy river. That's what I want to see." And so that's when he decided that they needed another vessel.
Yeah, I think that it was a really good idea for them to do this very thing because people always wanted new and exciting, and that's what they could expect from the park. And so this was their perfect opportunity.
Definitely. So Walt tasked his former naval officer turned park manager, Joe Fowler, with finding the inspiration for the new vessel. Fowler wasted no time and immediately began the search. And he visited maritime museums across America in an attempt to find the right ship. After looking at hundreds of options, Fowler decided that any old ship wouldn't do, not for the likes of a special place like Disneyland. This ship had to have special meaning. And because of that, he settled on creating the new Disney ship after the first American ship to sail around the world, the Columbia Rediviva.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure.
Rediviva.
Yeah, I'm not sure how we pronounce that end, the Rediviva.
I'm sure it's not right if I said it.
Well, I don't fault you because it's a very strange Strange name. This ship was one of the most majestic and mighty ships on the sea at that time.
Al, wouldn't it be awesome to talk to the guys who walked on the hollowed planks of that mighty vessel?
Well, it just so happens.
How you mean?
Roll it in, boys. So here it is. The Imaginarians in my grandfather's lab have cooked up something pretty special for us for this episode.
Whoa.
You can set it right there. Okay, perfect.
So for our listeners who can't see the contraption Al just wheeled in, it looks like a giant mirror.
This is what the Imaginarians call the time porthole.
I would like to take special time to point out that's porthole, not portal. Well done, Imaginarians. Well done.
They're not only scientists, but wordsmiths.
They're punsters.
So all we have to do is fire this thing up. Okay, there we go. And it should, yep, there it goes. It's created a portal through time for us to see what things looked like back in the day. It should also allow us to speak with important historical figures as though they were on the other side of a mirror.
Science is so awesome.
Crazy awesome, bro. Now all I have to do is type in the date where we want to glimpse into. And there. It worked. There he is.
Who?
The owner of the Columbia, Joseph Beryl. Hey, Mr. Beryl, thanks for joining us all the way from the late 18th century.
It is my pleasure, although I'm having trouble understanding what exactly is transpiring.
Don't worry about it, Joseph.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, as long as you boys say not to worry about it, this isn't even the most preposterous thing to happen to me at sea.
I'm sure there's some backstory there, but unfortunately we don't have time to talk about it. We were hoping to actually chat with you about the history of your ship for a couple of minutes.
By all means, although admittedly I'm in lean in the area of spare time. I'm helping the crew unload after a most magnificent voyage.
And what voyage might that be?
Oh, it was a truly fascinating one. They just returned from a world tour on the deck of my ship, the Columbia.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible endeavor.
It was indeed. The Columbia is the first American merchant ship to circumnavigate the entire globe. I'm most pleased.
Is that the Columbia right behind you, Mr. Beryl?
Quite so, gentlemen.
Can you tell us a little bit about her?
With pleasure. She's 86 feet in length and weighs 213 tons. Her three sails helped propel us through the mighty waves we encountered on our journey. They even sailed through a river up here in the Great Northwest and named it after my ship.
Wait, I didn't realize the Columbia River was actually named after your ship.
Indeed, my little fur trading vessel has become quite an American mainstay.
So your ship was used for fur trading?
Positively. And since I privately own the Columbia, the vessel does not contain the USS denotation that ships owned by the American government do. When we decided to use her for world travel, we equipped her with 10 cannons and 10 smaller ballistic guns. We didn't want to come across opportunistic scalawags with our knickers round our knees.
Well, I'm glad she's still intact. One last question before we let you go, Mr. Beryl. What does the future hold for your ship?
Oh, I'm certain the Columbia has a long and rich life ahead of her, gentlemen. I have absolutely no worries about that.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us, Mr. Beryl.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Wallace, can you place that parcel of pelts over by the case of dates?
Wow, Al, that was incredible. Hey, can we use that porthole to talk to other people in history and maybe change the world for the better? Like, can we warn some nice peasant to skip town before Genghis Khan shows up? Or no, wait, can we stop Walt Disney from smoking?
Nope. It was a one-time deal.
Nah, I think talking to the owner of the Columbia for a few minutes on our podcast is probably the best possible way this technology could have been applied.
I say, if you got one shot, make it count. And we did!
This opportunity comes once in a lifetime.
I'm just sad that Beryl didn't know the sad fate to his ship.
What was that fate?
Well, in the early 1800s, the Columbia would be decommissioned and sent to a salvage yard where it would be sold for its parts.
So you're telling me that a ship that has such historical significance was destroyed only a few years after its voyage around the world?
Sadly, yes. But the legacy of the ship has lived on, though the ship was itself destroyed. Not only was the Columbia River named after this ship, but the Apollo 11 command module that took Neil Armstrong and others to the moon was named the Columbia.
That's awesome.
As was the, I know, isn't it? The 1980s space shuttle was also named after the Columbia.
which is, if you think about it, a perfect name for two other American vessels that also traveled into unknown worlds.
Absolutely. I didn't know how much the Columbia had seeped into American subconscious and into Fowler's dreams for a ship that would enter the waters of the rivers of America.
But Fowler had a problem. He had the idea for his ship, but really only had a faint idea of what it looked like. There was only one image of the Columbia that remained, and that image didn't tell you a whole lot about the guts of the ship. But Fowler wasn't going to let a lack of images stop him, and Walt Disney, from bringing this piece of American greatness to Disneyland. So Fowler did what any self-respecting seafaring man would do. He took his issue to Washington. That's right, Fowler took a group of WED employees to the Library of Congress to research everything they could about the Columbia, and from this research, he was able to gather a pretty good body of information for how he should design the Columbia.
So Fowler and his team of WED designers went to building the mighty vessel based off of all of their research. They decided to make a full-scale replica, so the ship you ride on in the park is actually the same size as the original Columbia. He commissioned a guy by the name of Ray Wallace to help design the ship, and then they then sent the plan north and had the Columbia built at a place called Todd Shipyards in San Pedro, California. This is cool because this is actually the same shipyard where the Mark Twain's hull was built.
So the Mark Twain and Columbia share the same maker, at least their hulls?
They do indeed. The building of the Columbia would also make history in that it was the first windjammer type ship, whatever a windjammer is. I don't know, but
I think it has the sails. And then something else that's unusual about getting the hull built somewhere else is that Disneyland actually built all their stuff on site, mm-hmm. most of it.
Yeah.
So that's what's unusual, and that's why it gets special mention that ship hulls are so they're so technically difficult to build and take such a expertise that they had to use Todd Shipyards in San Pedro, which I'm sure if they had any choice to build it themselves they would have. But yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that's the thing is a lot of the set pieces, a lot of the buildings, all everything was built there. Now a lot of the attractions and vehicles, etc., were built primarily by contracted companies like Aero and things like that. But the majority of the brick and mortar and the bigger things were built on Disneyland, sans Mark Twain and Columbia.
Yeah.
But the thing that's actually really cool about it is this was the first type of ship known as the Windjammer to be built in the U.S. in over 100 years. Walt's bringing it back, old school. So one day during construction, Walt and Joe were actually having a very nautical conversation.
As gentlemen do.
Of course. And during this chat, Fowler shared with Walt that it was tradition to place a silver dollar at the base of each ship's mast during the building process. So Walt, ever the traditional guy, eagerly went out and gathered 3 silver dollars and personally placed them at the base of each of the Columbia's masts.
That is classic. I'm assuming those silver dollars are still there today?
I would imagine so.
So the day finally came for Columbia to make its maiden voyage. On the morning of June 4th, 1958, the sailing ship Columbia was christened. Joe Fowler made a point to be dressed as an 18th century sea captain for the ceremony and was accompanied by the musketeers.
And since that day, the ship has mightily sailed the serene waters of the rivers of America.
You know, the attention to detail on the Columbia is really something, like anywhere else in Disneyland. When you're traveling on the ship, be sure to go below deck and check out what the cargo bay and living quarters have to offer. It really makes you feel like you're reliving a key moment in American history. It's also like you're living Disney history, since the Columbia really hasn't changed over the years. It has undergone many refurbishments over its near 60 years of use, but the only thing that has truly changed about the vessel was the addition of the cruise quarters in 1964. Other than that, you are walking the same deck that Walt walked so many years before.
I think that's really, really awesome.
Something else that's notable about the Columbia is that it's actually to scale.
Yeah.
So the size of the ship in Disneyland is the actual size of the Columbia ship.
Which is incredible. When you're on the deck, it doesn't seem huge. I mean, And knowing that it actually traveled around the world,
yeah,
it makes you realize why these sailors went crazy at times.
Yeah, seriously. That's your life for months and months at a time. Well, and also everything else in Disneyland, or almost everything, is scaled. I think it's 5/8 is kind of the traditional number, but I'm not sure if that's
yeah, I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head. Well, and it's all using that forced perspective.
Yeah.
That it makes everything look bigger than it actually is.
Yeah, but it's interesting that because the Mark Twain riverboat was 3/4 scale. Mm-hmm. of a real riverboat, but they went with the Columbia full scale. And I think that this was obviously a deliberate decision. They didn't just, oops, it's yeah. full scale. But I wonder what the thought process was. And I can't help but think that in Walt's imagination, this boat was just huge and bigger than all these other things. So you have these little buildings, but this big boat, which kind of represents the open sea and everything, and adventure. Well, I think that's my interpretation of it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different possibilities out there. Because another thing that I would wonder is, maybe it came down to a financial situation that
yeah.
when the rest of Disneyland was open back in 1955, they were absolutely broke and beyond broke, like
oh,
in
yeah.
debt up to their Mickey Mouse ears. But now that a few years had passed in the late 1950s, they were starting to see some revenue, and you see a ton of people coming through the park, millions of people coming through the park by this
yeah.
time. And maybe they're finally at a place where they're like, okay, we can actually pop to do this on a little bit grander scale. Because I would imagine that Walt, if he had his way, everything would be full scale. And I mean, you see that especially down in Walt Disney World. The
yeah.
Main Street USA in the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World absolutely dwarfs that of Disneyland. And I think
yeah.
that it really does just come down to size of the area that they have to work with and money at that point. That's what's
yeah.
so quaint and cute about Disneyland. And that's why it's the greatest park in all of the Disney universe. We're going to get
well,
hate mail about that.
Them's fighting words.
I know. So going back to the sailing ship Columbia, it's an often overlooked attraction in the park that represents a major milestone in American history. Its three mighty sails catch not only the warm Southern California breezes, but also the imagination of millions of guests every year. She represents the can-do attitude that helped make America what it is today, and she's a very welcome addition to the waters of the happiest place on Earth. When it's not sailing the rivers of America, you can see it resting at Fowler's Harbor across from the Haunted Mansion.
And it's a beautiful sight, so I hope you check it out next time you're in the park.
Absolutely.
And that's all we have for this episode of The Backside of Water. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating us on iTunes and tell all your friends about it.
Absolutely. Also, please be sure to give us a follow on both Instagram and Twitter by simply searching The Backside of Water Podcast.
And for those of you who can't get enough podcasts, we have a sister podcast called Did You Know Disney, which is hosted by one host at a time, and just little snippets of Disney trivia and facts about not just the parks, but also the man himself, the merchandise, the experience, the movies, everything. So
and every once in a while, I know this is going to shock people, but every once in a while we may talk about some travel stuff, but not in the traditional route. I want
yeah.
it to be clear that we're not going to be like giving travel advice on what the best time. We're going to actually be talking about things to be on the lookout for when
yeah.
you're traveling through Disney resorts. And I think one thing that would be really cool is back in 2008, when I was still working at the park, Harrison and I took a trip together with some buddies down to Walt Disney World, and we spent
yep.
8 days down there. And I remember we only did parks for like 5 or 6 of the days,
and
then
we just did resorts.
We just walked through every single Walt Disney World resort.
It was so fun.
It was a ton of fun. Well, and I would say this, it was fun for Harrison and I, but literally everybody else would be like, why are we walking through another hotel again? And we're like, oh, we get to walk through another hotel again.
Yeah, well, every lobby is seriously, I think, really, really well-considered and well-themed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think the hotels, and that's something that they that they did with Disney World is they wanted the park magic to continue in your hotel room, so you don't go to like a dingy place with mildew in the shower and then go to the happy place on earth, the happiest place on earth, and then come back to your wretched sleeping cell.
Exactly. And this, folks, is what you can expect from an episode of Did You Know Disney? So jump over, check it out on iTunes, and like I said, we're at the release of this podcast. I'm not sure if we're up on Stitcher or not yet, but at any rate, for you Android listeners on the web, feel free to jump over and check our page out and see if we're up on Stitcher, because these podcasts get released in funky times. Yeah. So let's finish this up.
All right. So until next time, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step.
And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language.
But Al, since we're on a sailing ship, doesn't that mean we can swear like sailors?
All right. So if you actually hit your head on the Columbia, I'll let you swear like an 18th century sailor.
Oh, you got it. Rugged scurvy bugger!
Ah, confound the brigadier!
Barnacle sauce!